You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Ah, yes, it is just that. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. The Mets cannot, should not, hopefully will not pursue Trevor Bauer. 800-919-3776. When I say will not, I'm speaking wishfully, and I'll tell you why throughout the course of the evening. In fact, in just moments, we will also get to one Yankee who desperately wants DJ LeMahieu back, and he is the perfect illustration as to why DJ LeMahieu should be back with the Yankees this coming year. Plus, we'll get more into the Giants as well and the respect that they are starting to get around the league, perhaps more so than for any 5-7 team ever in the history of the NFL. Most importantly, it's about you at 800-919-3776 on Twitter as well, at Chris Carlin. By all means, chime in over there, the video live stream. We can put your comments up. We will get to those. You can check that out at ESPN New York 98.7's Twitter handle and over on ESPN New York's Facebook page. I'm a big fat no on Trevor Bauer. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. We've got winter meetings going on. The Mets seem like they're pretty close on getting a deal done here with James McCann. There seems to be a little bit of posturing back and forth right now with McCann and the Mets getting close, but not quite close enough. And the Mets letting it get out there that, you know, they could turn to Real Muto if instead they can't get something done with McCann to kind of force his hand. And to me, James McCann would be just fine. And I think would be an ideal fit for them, to be honest. And I know all about Real Muto, and I love JT Real Muto. I think he's a terrific player. Having all of that aside, I think we can all agree that one thing the Mets have done entirely too much over the last several years is to rely on the pitching that they have to carry the day. And I understand that because they didn't have many options financially. They had their pitching in place. They paid Jacob DeGrom, and they gave him what turned out to be a heck of a bargain deal. He can opt out here in a couple of years. They've got Syndergaard, who they hope to get back in relatively short order. They've got Marcus Stroman. You know, some of it didn't quite pan out, but relying on the pitching every year didn't pan out enough either because of the injuries, because of guys not performing to the level that you would expect them to. So you look at the free agent market for the Mets, and you start to consider what your options are. It's not a great free agent market for pitching. I'll be the first to tell you that. That doesn't mean you go get stupid. Let me put this in a way that you can understand and that I could understand. Because as I was thinking about it earlier, this is how I came around to the idea that you should not sign Trevor Bauer. Two words, Nate Solder. The best of a bad lot. Investing in somebody that is coming off of a career year, by any measure, a career year. And really, that's a career 2 months. That's not an entire season. Trevor Bauer pitched at an incredibly high level at a time when it was most important for him to do it. So, yeah, there's something to be said for that. There's some pressure on Bauer this past season to go and be able to get his money and position himself the best way possible. But you look at the rest of Trevor Bauer's career, do you really think that he's been an amazing pitcher? Has he been consistently really solid? I don't know that I would say that. I would say that Trevor Bauer has consistently been okay. You know, I look at a couple of years where he had nice seasons. You know, a year where he wins 17 games, but he also has an ERA north of 4. And yes, it's in the American League. And I look at a guy that has been a middle-of-the-road type pitcher with one or two exceptions. He pitched really well in 2018, but He missed a few starts there. And he pitched really well this season. And every other year, statistically, doesn't really come close to this year. Remember Nate Solder? A couple of years ago? The Giants had to go get a left tackle. They had to position themselves to get somebody who was going to be a centerpiece of their offensive line. And it was a bad year in free agency for left tackles or for offensive linemen, period. And they made a borderline catastrophic mistake of making a middle-of-the-road player the highest paid at his position in the game. That has not worked out. This year aside from him opting out, that has nothing to do with anything. If you went back, would you do that deal again if you were the Giants? The answer is no. I think something very similar could happen with Trevor Bauer. And then you think about the other aspect of it, that Nate Solder's a good dude. I'm not saying Trevor Bauer is a bad dude, but Trevor Bauer is a guy that I think we can all agree is not shy about sharing what he thinks. And you add that to New York, and you add that to social media, and you add it all together. How is that going to manifest itself if things are not going so well? You know, I was very surprised earlier in the offseason when you heard Sandy Alderson talk as frankly as he did about how he's a unique personality and we could learn some things from him in direct reference to Trevor Bauer. He's a good pitcher, a pitcher that had a great 2 months, and a guy that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. To the point where, you know, Terry Francona is walking out to the mound to take you out of the game and looks at you and says, "What the hell's the matter with you?" We have seen that blow up before. We have seen that get ugly before, where you have paid a big-time pitcher, at least what you think is a big-time pitcher off of a great year, a big amount of money, but it turns sour. Remember Brett Saberhagen? I mean, Bauer's not as good as Brett Saberhagen was with the Royals, and that got out of hand. And I know we're all excited that the Mets can finally spend some money, but I guess I would just say this. Don't get stupid. Don't get stupid. And when you overpay the top pitcher on the market, that's getting stupid. When the market is very thin, that's getting exceedingly stupid. So for me, the Mets need help in a lot of areas. Don't go and waste your resources on somebody that could be a headache if things are not going right. And to me, does not have a long enough proven track record of being a great pitcher when his career ERA is just about 4. That's decent. That's okay. That's not a guy that's worth a headache, and that's not a guy that's worth an absolute boatload of money. Just because you have the money now doesn't mean you can get stupid. Or you should get stupid. It's like the famous Gilbert Arenas quote at the club back in the day after he got all that money from the Washington Wizards. "Let's all get drunk and make bad decisions." This is almost that equivalent if you're not careful. I'm not saying don't go spend money. Go get McCann. Go get George Springer. Don't bring in the wrong guy. And that's what Trevor Bauer would be. 800-919-3776. At 8 o'clock, David Sampson is going to join us. The former president of the Marlins, He's got his own podcast now called Nothing Personal. He works for CBS Sports HQ. Speaking of somebody not afraid to speak his mind, we have a lot to get into with him. Give us some inside stuff on all of the winter meetings and how that works from the inside out. And also, Derek Jeter and his favorite Jeter story from down in Miami. Going to be interesting. I would advise you to stay tuned for that. Till then, though, it's you and me right now. Should the Mets go get Trevor Bauer? Should they go pay the top pitcher in what is a very weak pitching market this offseason? 800-919-3776. 800-919-3776. Wow, fantastic job by LSU. I just saw this news. They took a bowl ban this year for some of their violations. You know, at 3-5, under 500, yeah, that's a tremendous job by LSU to take a bowl ban in a year when they're not very good. And they might go to a bowl game just because they're LSU, but no, we don't have to travel. That is the equivalent of me saying, you know what? I'm going to protest by not going to the gym tomorrow. Good chance I probably wasn't going to do it anyway, but I'm going to take a stand and not do it at all. 800-919-3776. You know, on this Bauer thing, I'm completely in the dark as to why you would want to go and do this. I don't know how much sense it makes to add somebody to, in his past before, has been outspoken. And I don't know that Trevor Bauer is going to be the guy that you want to come in and, when things are not going well, cause problems. He's been a guy that has rubbed people the wrong way. Why would you want to go down that road again? Why would you want to do that? It's a little early, but you know what it's time for. Richard in Manhattan.
Hey, Chris. Chris, impressive win by Rutgers last night over Syracuse.
That was a good win, and I'll tell you what, Richard, what really impressed me the most about it is there have been countless times, especially, you know, when I was calling games when they weren't very good, there have been countless times where Rutgers has been that team to come back, they cut it to a tie game, or they take a one-point lead, but then over the last few minutes, the better team takes over. That's what happened last night.
Good, yeah. Maybe they'll make the top 10 in the next ratings.
Well, I don't think it'll come that soon. They're at 21 right now. I think you got a lot of work to do before you can get there. I just wish it wasn't such a bizarre year and stupid. Because
it's a benefit. We're going to do good. You're going to watch, right? Because it's going to
do
this.
But I mean, you know what I mean. I would like for fans to get to actually go and enjoy this.
It's okay. We're fans and we're watching and we're hoping. So that's just as good. As far as the Mets, Chris, why don't we get Zach Wheeler? The Phillies are letting him.
They're not trading him. So here's what's going on there. I got a unique perspective into that situation the other day with Wheeler, and we had Buster Olney on the other day talking about this. The owner, John Middleton, flipped out when he saw that report that the Phillies front office had actually discussed Wheeler with other teams just to get a feel for what they might get. And Middleton said, under no circumstances are we trading Zach Wheeler. So that's done. And the Mets would not be able to make a deal with the Phillies for Zach Wheeler. The Citizens Bank Park would implode if the Phillies traded Wheeler back to the Mets.
Yeah, I would have thought so too, but I don't know. I saw it in the paper, so I thought maybe there was a chance.
Everything in the paper is true.
Yeah, no, I know. Chris, are you on the Bill Cowher to the Jets bandwagon? Do you think that would work?
Do I think it would work? I think it would work.
All right,
do.
Let me get
my only problem here, Richard, is that Bill has been out of it for so long, and it's no surprise where you hear these from, right?
Can I tell you his connection to the Jets?
You hear it from Boomer, you hear it from Nate Burleson. He wants to float it out there, but he wants to be convinced to come back. In other words, he wants to get an absolute fortune, and he wants to have say over the personnel. You can't do that now when Bill Cowher's been out of the game for 13, 14 years.
Do you know he has a connection to the Jets?
Yeah, his new wife is a Jet fan.
No, I'll go back way back. Way back. I'm going to go back to
when he was a player with the Browns, a special teamer?
Way back.
Jeez, Richard.
In 1975, Bill Cowher went to school at North Carolina State. All right? Do you know who his coach was?
Lou Holtz.
And Lou Holtz left the school and became the Jet coach, making him the third worst coach in Jet history behind Gaze and Kotite. And this guy, Holtz, was there for 13 games. He couldn't even finish the season. He gave up before the last game because he knew he wasn't cut out to be a pro coach. Anyway, he left North Carolina State to take the Jet job, and he was a player on that team.
So you're tying together because of all of that. Bill Cowher is going to be the Jets coach.
That's my, what do they call that, separation? Three degrees of separation? Or five?
Yeah, that's what they call it. Thanks, Richard.
Okay, well, that's...
It's 28 degrees of separation. You could go back 1971, and Bill Cowher met Lou Holtz's son somewhere, and he and Skip Holtz hung out a little bit. So there's a natural tie in there for the Jets. He'll end up being the coach. Oh. Oh. You know, the thing about Cowher to the Jets, we'll talk more about that. I think Bill Cowher was a really good coach. I'm a Steelers fan. I, toward the end, hated Bill Cowher because it took forever to win the big game, and they kept losing the big games. And when they finally won Super Bowl 40, I sat there and was just more relieved than anything else that they actually didn't blow it. But I don't think that Cowher would come back and have trouble relating to the players and, you know, connecting with them. He's got that engaging personality. One thing I would say, though, is he should not be coming back and running the show anywhere. Not when you're 13, 14 years removed from coaching. No, absolutely not. That, to me, is then just asking for trouble. You know, you have to understand, you have to have been around player evaluation recently to understand how that all works. Scott in Long Island is next, 98.7 ESPN. Scott, what's going on?
Carlin, how are you? I saw in the paper that Ray Perkins passed away.
Yeah, that was sad. 79 years old. I was sad to see that.
Yeah, but he reminds me of that time the Giants were. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I think there's a lot of analogy to the Jets. You know, that Tim Mara and Wellington Mara weren't getting along. The Giants were dysfunctional. Pete Rozelle decided something had to be done. New York was too important. And from that, we got George Young, football guy. And from that football guy, we got Ray Perkins. And then we got Parcells. And then we were pointed north. And again, you know, they could be great owners. They're not football guys. And they need this team, if anything, screams, they need a football leader. Call it president, call it whatever you want to call it. It's the Jets. And they should learn from history.
But I think they have a football guy with Joe Douglas.
Well, and if he's the guy, I hesitate to compare him to George Young, but if he's the guy, then let him.
Well, no, I mean, it would be unfair to Joe Douglas and unfair to George Young to make that comparison yet. But
right.
This was an incredibly respected individual in league circles when he got the job, and he came here knowing full well how big of a rebuild this was going to be. Like, Joe Douglas came here with his eyes open, and I get it that people want results right away, and they feel like they've gotten worse. Wait till the offseason, wait till the next 2 to 3 years, and this will start to take shape as you want it to look.
Then let Douglas choose a head coach, and let the head coach report to Douglas. And this dual reporting system is fantastic.
I agree with that, and thanks for the call. I could not agree more that the idea of having the guy in charge of the football operations and the head coach both reporting to the owner is a good idea? No, it's a horrible idea with the Jets. There are some places where that could work. There is no reason for Woody Johnson or Christopher Johnson to need to have that other than for their own ego. And it just creates problems. When you are not a stable enough organization at the very top, and listen, from everybody I know that works for the team, they love working for the team. It's not like there is an interior dysfunction that existed with the Mets. I know a lot of people that work for the New York Jets that absolutely love working for the Johnsons and love working for that family and that organization. It's the same is true with the Giants. You have people at the Giants who have never left. But from a football standpoint, it's very similar to what you were talking about that happened with the Giants. You just need to let Joe go do his job, let him hire the coach, and go from there. And that way, you have a nice, clean alignment on the situation. We'll share some more thoughts about Bill Cowher throughout the course of the night, but the Jet coaching situation is one that has to have everybody on the same page and has to be aligned properly. Over on Twitter, at Chris Carlin, primarily because of what he did in 2018. I know he had a really good 2018. This was a career 2 months. His ERA this season, in the 2 months here, was 1.73. Okay, and that's in 11 starts. In 2018, 2.21. In 27 starts, 28 games overall. So basically what you're telling me there is a little over a year in total between the two. He missed some starts there, but a little over a year in total, about 40 starts, he's been great in his career. Over, 195. No, guys, you know, 1 year plus 2 months does not a great pitcher make. So I had one guy, Mike Salfino, and I know Mike from back in the day. Mike Salfino on Twitter. Sigh. He was just as good in 2018. League-leading FIP ERA. I don't care if his flop ERA was .2. I don't hand Trevor Bauer that amount of money for the amount of his career that he's been average. Average. Listen, when you have what you have coming next year, as a few people make the point in terms of the free agent market, you know, you've got, let's see, Verlander, Scherzer, Kershaw, and Greinke. They're all older. If you want next year, you got Lance Lynn, Morton. He's older. Syndergaard, Stroman, Gausman, McCullers, and Bundy. So point is, when Bauer is the top guy, and it's not close on anybody else right now, I would not hand him a ridiculous amount of money. I would not hand him 6 years and, you know, whatever it is, $150 million. I don't even know what the prices are they're talking about on Bauer right now. But no, absolutely not. Ryan on Twitter checking in. You're the WOAT, as in worst of all time. Thank you very much. Stephen Belford on Twitter. You're going to eat crow on this tweet one day, CC. Well, go ahead. Contact your freezing takes exposed. It's called having some guts and an opinion. How about that? 800-919-3776. It's kind of what the show's about. Buddha in the Bronx. Buddha, what's going down?
Hey, what's going on, bro? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Buddha. How are you?
I'm all right. Listen, every time I listen to you, I wonder, is Joe Douglas like a family member or something like that? I'm going to tell you something honestly,
the one thing I'll say about Joe is he is exceptionally handsome. If you look at the two of us, we look like we were separated at birth. But the point with Joe is, no, it's not that. And I don't know if you heard me, you probably didn't hear me say this a few weeks ago. And it was in relation to, you know, all the crap with Manish. You know, you do have people that have their agendas in the media, okay? There's, of course you do. I'm going off of what I saw of Joe in Philadelphia and the difference that he made down there in terms of being in charge of their player personnel. He was in charge of it, helping to build that Super Bowl team. And now that Joe's gone, do you notice what's going on in Philadelphia? It's kind of falling apart. We should take notice of that. And look, I don't love what he did with the offensive line this past year, but I know that they were trying to get Jack Conklin and they couldn't get him to come here. He would have been a perfect right tackle for a long time for the New York Jets. But once they didn't get him, they didn't overspend on another big-time tackle because there really wasn't any other great ones out there to be had, maybe one or two. They went and spread it around, and I didn't love how it came out. I'll be the first to tell you that. I just think that the way he has positioned the Jets here in terms of cap room and draft assets, they're in great shape. This is actually a really good job.
Listen, that in terms of the draft picks, I agree with you on that. But the point, what I'm talking about, is where the Jets are as a franchise. Mm. When we talk about, you were talking about Bill Cowher. Listen, I'll take Tony Dungy, if you could, ahead of Bill Cowher, because I felt like he did more with Tampa Bay as Cowher came in. The Steelers were a great organization already. You know, he was a good coach, and he, you know, he got them over the hump, like you said. It took him a while. But the point being is,
a long time.
What you say, it did, but listen, they were in big games, though. And as a Jets fan, to go to 3 or 4 AFC championship games, you know, within a 10-year span, and win a Super Bowl, we'll take that.
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt that you would. I'm not anti-Cowher because of that at all. The only thing I would say that would have me anti-Cowher is if he wants to come in and have full control of the entire organization. No, absolutely
but look,
not.
But look, though, with Joe Douglas, like we like some of the picks. But if you when you're in a position where the Jets are, see, the Giants are a national franchise. The Jets are a local franchise and a national punchline. When we were like this before, it took somebody to come in who not only changed the culture of the team in terms of the players, but also the viewpoint of people who would want to sign as free agents and people that you could draft. If I'm going to bring in a coach that's going to be on that level, he's not going to be the kind of coach that's going to take it, like that he's going to report to Joe Douglas. Come on, bro. That kind of, that A-type personality is not going to do that. And that's where our problem is right now. We got
ownership,
which is hard to overcome.
I'm not hiring him.
I don't want another coordinator. We've tried that already. These guys all look good when they're on the sidelines of winning teams. You don't know if they're ready to run a franchise. And I mean, a team, but especially a team that's in the depths of doo-doo where this Jets team is. You got to have an experienced guy come in here to fix this. I'm telling you, man.
I understand that, but let's also at least acknowledge that it's been 13, 14 years since he's been a coach. 13 or 14 years, and I personally don't believe that that would hold him back from being really good. I think he would, but I don't put him. By the way, Bill Cowher was never in charge of all the personnel in Pittsburgh. Never, never.
He doesn't have to be in charge of the personnel. What I'm saying is he has to be able to say to Joe Douglas, this is what I want, and Joe Douglas makes that happen for him.
It has to be a collaboration. You're right about that, and thanks for the call. It has to be a collaboration. It has to be two guys on the same page. That's what it has to be. But what I don't want to see happen is Bill Cowher come in here and he's going to take over the Jets and report to the owner, and Joe Douglas reports to the owner, and in a year or two, if they're not winning games, even though they've been positioned as they have, and Bill Cowher wants his own guy, or and he sees an opening, kind of like Adam Gase did, then you're going out and you're making another move and you're doing that and you continue in the dysfunction. If you want to go and pay Bill Cowher to be the coach, that's great. Go pay him a fortune. I don't care about that. Bill Cowher coaching the Jets would be just fine. In no way should he be running the Jets. A couple of tweets over at Chris Carlin I wanted to get to, especially off of the David Sampson interview. Carl Semkow, our buddy, checking in. David took you to school down low. Having directed finance during my career, it always rankles me when someone assumes they know how an organization is doing and what their cash flow is like. David explained why your unschooled Yankee assumptions are all wrong. Here's the problem with that, okay? $683 million in revenue in addition to the television network. I mean, that's even more money, and even he pointed to that. He was talking about the baseball operation itself. He wasn't necessarily talking about the entire thing. And I listen, the debt service on the stadium, I can't imagine what that looks like. I mean, we saw what was going on with Citi Field and how bad that was crippling the Mets, but the Yankees are not the Mets. And yes, while they haven't sold as many of those seats down low as they expected to, everybody else that's coming to the games is paying a pretty price. You know, so you look at that, and they may get hit a little bit when the deals they make with, you know, StubHub or whoever on the secondary market, wherever they end up in the secondary market, and the prices go a little bit cheaper on game days, but you're still paying to sit in any good seat in that stadium over $100 a ticket. Likely. Close to it, at least. For a good seat, for a seat like in the second deck between the bases, yeah, at least $100, at least. And that's on the low end. A couple of others. Danny on Twitter. Note to self, always do the opposite of what Chris Carlin says and wants. All right. I mean, that's a philosophy. It may not be the right philosophy. I kind of have been right on a lot of things the last few, I don't know, decades. John Supa enjoyed that interview. Jarv from down low, talk about needing the towel off after that interview. Yeah, David's not shy. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Back to the calls. Here's D on Long Island next. 98.7 ESPN. D, what up?
What's up, Carlin? Thanks for taking my call, man.
You got it.
I enjoyed the interview with that guy, but was he the one that said Ichiro was overpaid when the Marlins gave him a $90 million contract for 5 years? I don't know.
Well, the Marlins didn't give. Did the Marlins give Ichiro that money?
I don't remember the Marlins.
No, it wasn't Ichiro. They gave Reyes. They gave Reyes that money.
It wasn't Ichiro?
I'll double check. I mean, I'm blanking on that. That doesn't sound quite right. I don't think the Marlins gave Ichiro 5 years and $90 million.
The Mariners. When the Mariners gave him that $90 million contract, he came out and said, you know, it's bad for baseball, it's a bad contract, so-and-so, and you know the story. Ichiro wound up putting Hall of Fame numbers up.
They ended up giving – I don't remember if that was David specifically. That was back in 2000 when the Mariners got him. Obviously, he was a tremendous player. Huh?
Yeah, but he's tripping.
Sampson was not an owner in 2000. I think their first year with Jeffrey Loria was 2001, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, he was up in Montreal at that point, now that I think about it. He was with Jeff Loria in Montreal first. He may have been the guy that said that, but I guess my point about it would be they made some bad deals with the Marlins too. They paid a lot of guys a lot of money. I think giving an opinion on it is not a big deal. I don't have a problem with that at all.
But then he gave an opinion and said LeMahieu for 4 years is a bad contract.
Hasn't he learned from experience to give that opinion? I disagree with him completely.
Yeah.
I totally disagree with him. And I think LeMahieu is going to easily get four and may get a fifth. I think that's absolutely going to happen. If LeMahieu only gets 3 years at 16 per, and he should have been the should have taken the qualifying offer, that I don't agree with at all. And I mean, I got into it with him a little bit, but I just like we are pushing it here with that.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that Yankees should do everything to sign LeMahieu. He's been their best player the past 2 years, and you know he's still young. It's not like he's old, so.
Yeah,
that's
listen.
One of your thoughts on that, you know.
He's 32. Thanks for the call. I wouldn't say he's young. He's in the middle of his prime. And are you paying for performance of the last 2 years? A little bit you are, sure. But I think you're paying for performance that you're going to get for at least the next two, if not 3 years as well. Does he look to anybody like someone that's going to fall off? Does he remotely resemble that player? No. Absolutely not, he doesn't. And when I hear what Clint Frazier has to say about it, that gets me a little bit more fired up for it. It kind of proves the point. The guy is exactly what they need in so many different ways. Like, if you were to actually design the perfect Yankee right now, LeMahieu's what it looks like. Edgar in the Bronx, next, 98.7 ESPN. Edgar, what's up?
How are you doing?
Thanks for I'm great, Edgar. What do you got?
Yeah, I want to change topics from baseball to college football. I don't think Ohio State should be ever considered this year anyway for the college football playoff because they play less games and their strength of schedule is really weak, and the committee should consider that because they're number 72 in the country. And I think that teams that played more games than them, like a Texas A&M, who has played more quality teams and have more quality wins, even though Texas A&M did lose to Alabama, but Ohio State, it seems that, you know, the Big Ten and the NCAA, they're like, they want to bend over backwards, trust to get a Big Ten team.
Well, the Big Ten does. Not the NCAA. The Big Ten wants to bend over backwards to make sure they get a team in the playoff because that means a boatload of money for them.
I agree on the boatload of money, but in the past, when they considered every variable, strength of schedule, who they played, when they played, Ohio State's only quality win was against Indiana when you have a Texas A&M team who has more quality wins than they do, and they play nearly twice as many games. Why should Ohio State get the benefit of the doubt by the committee at all when you have other teams who are more worthy than them? I understand Ohio State is a great team, and they're based on their name, Ohio State. But then if you're going to go by what Ohio State is doing with less than his games, then you know what? They consider
but
USC,
isn't,
who has
let me ask you this question, and I'm only playing devil's advocate here, okay? Edgar, let me ask you this question, okay? And I'm only playing devil's advocate here.
Of course.
Number one, Ohio State's only played five games because of COVID, right? Two of them that they've missed hasn't been their own COVID, so you can't really blame them for that. So why do they automatically get penalized because they were doing the right thing from the health standpoint? Where this was truly screwed up was the Big Ten even putting a number on the amount of games that you needed to play in the Big Ten championship to begin with. Kevin Warren and the head of the conference have looked terrible this year. They have handled this so poorly. They canceled it at the beginning, thinking everybody was going to follow them. They didn't. Then they came back and played, and it's been good the way they've been able to play. But now they set the six-game limit on it, and you just pigeonholed yourself into having to change your own decision. Bottom line here is this. Ohio State, undefeated, is going to get more equity, more belief, more faith from the College Football Playoff Committee than Texas A&M at 7-1 because of their history. That's just what it boils down to. Because they're a blue blood.
But I don't
get it, but you have to remember, I mean, A&M, the thing that everybody's going to point to is this. A&M has a loss, and they got their doors blown off by Alabama. I mean, listen, That's what it boils down to. And thanks for the call. I get it. I understand where you're coming from. A&M has a loss. Ohio State doesn't. Sam in Orange. Sam, what's going on?
How are you doing, Chris?
I'm good, Sam. How are you?
Good. I'm a big Knicks fan. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we were doing the same old silly charade all over again. They never get their big guy. When are they going to get that big guy? We get last year's to get KD and Kyrie. We get Bobby Portis and Taj Gibson. This year's to get good players, but then we go get out.
Sam, I need you to slow down just a hair.
We're doing the same old silly charade with the Knicks. They were supposed to get someone mm-hmm. big. When are we going to get that big guy?
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you expect them to be able to do when the big player doesn't want to come here right now?
Rise up. I think this year they did better, but are they going to get that big guy?
Hey, listen, it's going to take some time, and thanks for the call, Sam. Here's the problem, okay? And we had Woj on last week, and this is where you knew you were dead, or about, what, 10 days ago or so. When Woj started talking about, speaking of that word, equity having to be built up by the Knicks, by Leon Rose and by Worldwide West in different roles. Yes, they are known and respected throughout the basketball world, but now they are in the role of running an organization that has had a terrible reputation for the last several years. So they have to come in, they have to be able to build the product somewhat through the draft, through a potential trade for a malcontent, something like that, somebody who's unhappy in their situation, and prove that they deal with players in a very positive and good way. And this is a good place to come and learn and be a good player. So I think that, and be a winner, I should say, that they're going to have a winning culture moving forward. I think when you look at all of that, and you hear Woj say this is going to take some time to build that equity, that's where you have to understand it's not going to happen overnight, and just because they have the money doesn't mean they're going to be able to get the guy. We've obviously seen that quite a bit since 2010. Once LeBron didn't come to the Knicks, all bets were off for the future. You know, LeBron telling you he wanted to be a Knick, and then at the same time saying what a disastrous meeting he had with them, just shows you what a complete mess it turned into for a long time. And players did not trust the organization enough to come here voluntarily. Okay, so you're starting at square one again, and that sucks. There's no doubt that sucks. But it's what you have to do. And you can't do anything about your situation but improve it yourselves by improving the culture, by improving the talent through the draft, which I think they have done this year. I think Obi Toppin's going to be a really good player. And I like Quickly as well. I think he could be good. Do I think he's going to be a superstar? No. Toppin, I think, could be a star in the league. Absolutely, he could. And then you continue to build, but it's going to take time. And patience is a four-letter word for Knicks fans. I totally understand that, but a lot of them seem more than content right now to let that develop. Now, the one thing I would caution against is this. When that opportunity comes up, you cannot let it slip through your fingers. I would have absolutely been on Westbrook, but I don't think they were truly going to get Westbrook. And I think that, frankly, they should have been able to make a better deal with Houston than Houston ended up making, as they're trying to salvage a relationship with James Harden that is just not salvageable anymore. And they're going to get stuck with John Wall for a long time. But they'll say they got talent back. Well, they also got a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. The Knicks, to me, would have been making a better overall deal for their organization if they're not giving back that kind of salary. But here they are. And the next time that opportunity comes up and they can make that trade, they have to make sure they strike at the chance. We have discussed quite a bit. Free agency, the winter meetings, the Mets getting closer on whether or not they're going to get James McCann, which sounds like it's going to be a four-year deal and probably in the neighborhood of $40 to $45 million instead of going down the JT Realmuto road. We've discussed quite a bit who the Yankees would potentially get in place of DJ LeMahieu and how LeMahieu is really the perfect fit in another way that we found out today from Clint Frazier and the incredible impact that he had on him this year, and whether or not the Mets should be chasing Trevor Bauer. And the true answer is they absolutely should not be in every single way. We'll tell you why in just a few minutes. Let's start, though, with a topic that has come up this week with Bill Cowher and the New York Jets. And I have to tell you, I don't hate the idea. I really don't. Now, Bill obviously is very intrigued by this job, which, by the way, is going to be one of the most desired jobs, if not the best job this coming offseason. I know it sounds crazy to say that about the Jets, but that's true. Why? Because of all the cap room they have, because of all the draft picks they have, because of the possibility of getting Trevor Lawrence to come play here, you have that chance to really have success in a relatively short amount of time, within a couple of years. And you can do it before you pay the quarterback. Now, here's what Bill Cowher is doing. He's obviously getting it out there through Boomer, through Nate Burleson, who you heard talk about it today, floating it out there that he'd have some interest in it, but he'd really have to be convinced to come back. Okay, if that's a financial convincing, great, no problem. Financial shouldn't be a concern at all. I'll tell you what else isn't a concern. I don't mind that Bill Cowher hasn't been coaching in 13, 14 years. I mean, look at the success. Gruden's done a pretty good job with the Raiders. I think we can agree on that, right? He was out for a long time. And Cowher, to me, is a guy that goes and connects with players in a very, very positive way. I look at that, and I think that Cowher is somebody that builds relationships, got the most out of his players consistently year after year, and turned some guys into some stars. Now, the big knock on Cowher for a long time, and it was justifiable, was that he couldn't quite get them over the hump, and he finally did, you know, 15 years into his career or whatever it was. But the point is that he is somebody that could come in here and really help turn things around because he would build those relationships, build that great culture, and be somebody who's just frankly a very good head coach, a very good head coach. The Jets could do so much worse than Bill Cowher, and if he wants a lot of money, go ahead and pay him. I wouldn't pay him the Gruden 10 years, $100 million. I'm not doing that, but I might do 5 and 50. That aside, there's one reason you don't hire Bill Cowher. If he wants control of the players, you can't do that. You can't do that. You have to make sure that if Bill Cowher is going to be here, that he and Joe Douglas are going to be on the same page and working together. And Joe Douglas is the guy that's in charge of the personnel, but they are working together in every way possible so that they are on the same page about what players are going to fit what they're trying to do. Now, Bill would obviously have more equity than a coordinator coming in to get the head coaching job. And even if it was structured to the point where Bill and Joe Douglas both report to the owner, I guess you'd probably have to do that. I'd hate doing it with anybody else. And I think if for some reason Bill doesn't like Joe, in a year or two he could be in Christopher Johnson's ear and you could see just what happened with Gase and with Mike Maccagnan, although Mike Maccagnan had to go and Joe's done a pretty good job of positioning this team well for the future. I don't want Cowher to be somebody who has been watching from the sidelines for 14 years and working on personnel. He should not be in charge of personnel. He was never fully in charge of personnel in Pittsburgh. He never was. That was never the structure that they had. Didn't matter who the coach is in Pittsburgh, they're never going to run the show completely. That's not how it goes. And look at all the success that they've had over the years. So you need to make sure that's a partnership. In every way, that has to be a partnership. If you want to bring Cowher back to coach the team, pay him a lot of money, and make sure that he and Joe are on the same page, great. If Bill wants to call all the shots, not today. Nope, absolutely not. Because you can look at it however you want. They're going 0-16 this year, and it's so awful, right? Guys, I would just remind you, twice, Douglas turned the job down. Why did he turn the job down? Because he saw what the situation was, what the amount of time has been that other GMs have gotten, which hasn't been nearly enough, and did not want to take his first shot at being a GM in a situation that he wasn't going to get enough time. That's why he got a 6-year contract at $3 million per. Because he knew it wasn't going to happen overnight. And now, if you bring in the right coach, if that's Cowher, if that's Eric Bieniemy, if that's Greg Roman, whoever it is, if you have everybody working on the same page and you have the money being spent properly and the draft picks being used properly on good players, which I think we could say from this past year, the good players have come in for the Jets so far. It looks pretty darn good with Becton, with Mims, with Bryce Hall. P. Ryan's okay. You know, they got it. Ashton Davis is improving. You know, there haven't been any complete washouts yet. Remember Ja'Kai Polite, a third-round pick, who was gone after training camp or before training camp was even over? 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Let's hit Mike in Rumson, New Jersey. Michael, what's going on, bud?
Hey, good evening, Chris. How are you?
I'm great, Mike. What do you got?
Well, the thing is that you can bring Trevor Lawrence in just like you did with Darnold and Sanchez. And in the last 15 years, have the Jets drafted one receiver that has ever even cracked 1,000 yards?
No.
Okay. Now let's think about that for a second. Now, this kid's going to come in, and the Steelers every year, they use the second and third rounds and pluck cherries out of the draft like water as far as receivers. We know that, correct?
We do.
Why don't the Jets do that?
Well, they took a receiver in the second round this year in Denzel Mims.
Right, but they passed up a lot, too.
Because they took Mekhi Becton.
Receivers.
Because they took Mekhi Becton.
But they had all of these picks. They could have used one for, like, you know, maybe Hamler.
They took Mekhi Becton. They didn't have all of these picks, as you put it. They took Mekhi Becton, and then they took a receiver in the second round. And Mims is starting to look like, if he can stay healthy, that he might be a very good pick. Is he Chase Claypool yet? No, he's not.
No,
but he hasn't been healthy enough to be Chase Claypool yet.
Well, do you think that Douglas, okay, he doesn't have a very good offensive mind. He's always sort of drafting the defensive players, the offensive line, the defensive line. Do you think that they're going to hang Lawrence out to dry?
Well, he took offensive players in the first 2 and 3 rounds this year.
Well, do you think that they're going to draft players that are going to surround this Trevor Lawrence with the skilled players that he needs to be successful, like the Chiefs?
Yes. I do, and thanks for the call. And here's why. Because it is, you got to, I get it. Same old Jets. I get it. I understand. You have been hurt. You only have one frame of reference. I'll use this example, okay? And I understand that, okay? I understand where you're coming from. In my career, I've been told a lot of things by bosses and a lot of people, right? Sometimes they've come through, but most times it hasn't quite worked out the way I would have hoped, with the exception of here. And, well, I don't need to get into specifics. Suffice it to say, it's worked out great here. But if you're talking about my frame of reference, actions mean more than words, right? Because I've been told a lot over the course of my career, and we've all been in that situation where you get told things at your job and you want to get promoted and you want to get something else and it doesn't necessarily happen. You know, you look at what's happened with the Jet fans and they have consistently been told that this is the guy who's going to go get it done for you and that this is the coach who's going to finally bring you over the top. And it hasn't happened. You've been continuously burned. That is your frame of reference. It is hard to have faith in a new situation, in a new person, when that is your frame of reference. Unfortunately, what I'm telling you is you have to have that faith. You have to have that faith. Because if you don't, then you're just going to live in this negativity and you're just waiting to get burned. And I understand. I get it. You have been kicked in the pants so many times. But now, I do feel like you're positioned pretty well. And this is somebody that I can honestly say does have a track record, not as a GM, but as a director of player personnel, where he was really picking the players down in Philadelphia in charge of that. And they went and won a Super Bowl. And since he left, things have not exactly worked out well. Now, I'd say this. My frame of reference has been mixed before with things that you're told and things that you're, you know, actions that do come from it. And I think you just have to continue to have that faith in life and in and outlook. And it's easy for me to sit here and say that because of how much you've been burned. Hey, I've been burned before. I continue to stay optimistic. And just so we're not parsing any words, it's been amazing here. I love working here.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.